From KCRW in Santa Monica and PRI, Public Radio International, this is To the Point.
Russiagate, nearing the end or just the beginning? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point. President Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, appeared in court today on charges including money laundering to evade taxes. The president tweeted, "It all happened years ago, before Manafort joined his campaign." He also added, "There is no collusion." But Democrats speculate that special counsel Robert Mueller is pressuring Manafort to testify about Russian meddling in last year's campaign. Also today, a low-level aide pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about trying to set up a meeting with Russians and the Trump campaign. We'll look for connections. On our talking point later, the joy of the Astros and the agony of the Dodgers. First, here's the news.
Check out KCRW's all-news channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, the BBC, and more 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24, or you can listen on KCRW's app.
Support for To the Point comes from the members of KCRW and from the Public Radio International Program Fund.
Hello again, Warren Alney back with To the Point. This year's World Series is being called baseball's answer to Game of Thrones. On our next talking point later, it'll be later in our program, we'll update last night's action and hear what might be next. First is news update. Special counsel Robert Mueller is assigned to determine if Donald Trump's presidential campaign colluded with Russia to influence last year's election. Today, one-time campaign chair Paul Manafort appeared in federal court based on a grand jury indictment brought by Mueller. Here's the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity.
Philip Bump is keeping track for the Washington Post. Always good to have you with us. So what does this have to do with the president and the campaign?
Well, obviously the most immediate thing that it has to do with the president is that this was Donald Trump's campaign chairman. He served in that role for several months during 2016, worked with the campaign for even longer than that, overlapping with the original campaign chairman, Corey Lewandowski. Manafort's ties to Ukraine were known before he actually took the role with Donald Trump. There certainly are some questions about why the Trump campaign would have moved forward with Manafort, knowing what the world knew about some of the murkiness about his business dealings. But when Sanders says that what the indictment centers on wasn't actually anything to do with the campaign, that's accurate. That said, one of the speculations that is out there is that Robert Mueller, the special counsel's team, is hoping to do is to be able to use that indictment against Manafort to potentially see if he can use that as a point of leverage in part of a broader investigation.
Okay, we'll be talking about that later on our program. Also today, one of the president's foreign advisors pled guilty to lying to the FBI about efforts to set up a meeting with Russians and the Trump campaign about dirt on Hillary Clinton. Who is this? How high-level a campaign operative was he?
So his name is George Papadopoulos. He is a very low-level campaign operative. He essentially had worked with there was an effort in March of 2016. The Trump campaign was trying to show that it had some foreign policy chops as it was pushing toward the Republican nomination. So during a meeting actually with the Washington Post in March, Trump outlined the people who would be on his foreign policy advisory committee that included Papadopoulos. And essentially what happened is that Papadopoulos went to Europe, made contact with the guy who had contact with Russians, and then spent months trying to get the Trump campaign to sit down to try and get Trump to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin unsuccessfully.
And here again is Sarah Huckabee Sanders today at the White House.
He reached out and nothing happened beyond that, which I think shows, one, his level of importance in the campaign, and two, shows what little role he had within coordinating anything officially for the campaign.
So there was, however, a meeting, and it had to do with Donald Trump Jr. meeting with Russians. Is there thought to be a connection between that and what Mr. Papadopoulos was trying to set up?
Well, I think there's pretty clearly a connection from the standpoint of what the Russian government was trying to do. Essentially, the Russian government, through various individuals, had had contact with Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos ended up actually talking with someone from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Russia, who actually was trying to get this Trump-Putin meeting set up. But Papadopoulos had also been told that there was this cache of emails that the Russians had involving Hillary Clinton. We're not clear on which emails exactly those were. But this was the same pattern we saw with that Trump Jr. meeting at Trump Tower, that the Russians or someone connected to the Russian government had promised that there was dirt on Hillary Clinton and that someone from the Trump side had enthusiastically tried to get that dirt in hand.
Another thing we heard today from the White House press secretary, Ms. Sanders, was that she expects Mueller, she said, to conclude his investigation very soon. Is there evidence for that?
There's not, but then there's not really evidence either way. Robert Mueller has consistently kept his operation pretty close to the chest for a variety of reasons. It certainly is the case that Mueller indirectly works for Attorney General Jeff Sessions because his mandate is through the Justice Department, so it's possible that Jeff Sessions has told the president that this won't last much longer. How Sessions knows that specifically isn't really clear. I can say that there doesn't seem to be any public evidence that this thing is close to winding up necessarily.
Well, does he really work for Sessions, who has, I take it, removed himself from this issue, or does he work for the Deputy Attorney General?
He does. Technically, Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, is the one that actually appointed Mueller. Since Sessions does run the Justice Department, though, that may be a way in which Trump knows about it. That was a speculation on my part. It's not clear how they have the basis for saying that this thing may wrap up soon.
If Papadopoulos is low-hanging fruit, what other low-hanging fruit is there? Manafort's pretty high on the tree.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a great question. I don't think anyone's expecting this Papadopoulos announcement today, and I think that it's important to note the timing here. So Papadopoulos, we know, was arrested in July, late July, at Dulles Airport. He'd just arrived from Germany. He was arrested. He sat down at the FBI. He had talked to them previously in January, and that was when they caught him lying about various statements. So he was arrested on October 5th. He signed this deal with the FBI admitting to having lied to them, but that was sealed until today. And I think it's interesting because in the Papadopoulos statement, it makes pretty clear that he's been working with the federal government, that he has had multiple interviews with them, answered their questions. And so that news that he had admitted to having committed a felony and that was under seal until today, it's hard not to wonder if there's a link between that becoming news today and Manafort becoming news today.
Okay, fellow Bump of The Washington Post, thanks a lot. Great to talk with you.
Thanks, sir.
So, what will this mean for investigations by Congress? We'll talk about that in a moment on To the Point from PRI.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Earn your graduate degree in a flexible online format from University of Southern California and learn from faculty at the top of their fields in areas such as business, health, law, engineering, psychology, communications, and more. Explore your options today at online.usc.edu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
KCRW thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com.
We're only back with To the Point. Once again, one-time Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort was in court today to face charges, including money laundering and conspiracy against the United States to avoid paying taxes. Here's Democrat Adam Schiff, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee.
This is no small fish. This is the campaign manager for the Trump campaign at the pivotal time in which the Russians approach the campaign and offer help in the form of derogatory information about Secretary Clinton, and the emails start being dumped. So he's a pivotal character, and if he decides to cooperate, we could learn a lot more.
Former Democratic Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman is with us. She was on the House Judiciary Committee during Watergate. She was also a district attorney in Brooklyn. It's good to have you on our program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So what do you think of the claim by Sarah Huckabee Sanders that Mr. Mueller is going to wrap up his investigation very soon?
Wishful thinking. I mean,
okay.
it's just nonsense. They don't have any idea. They're hoping that that's the case. And, you know, I think there have been various kinds of signals from the White House that have been, if not obstruction of justice, borderline obstruction. I mean, you could take this as a signal of saying maybe you better wrap up the investigation quickly. I mean, earlier we know that Donald Trump was saying things like, well, you know, the timing of these indictments, that's not coincidence. That's suggesting that it was deliberately done to obfuscate their tax plan for this week. Well, accusing the special counsel, Mueller, basically of using his office in a political way is an attack on that office. It's stupid for them to do that because it could be borderline obstruction of justice. And if you ever had an impeachment inquiry, it could be an abuse of power. The president should be taking his hand off the special prosecutor and not interfering. We know he fired the head of the FBI for continuing the Russian investigation. So I guess a lot of people are very nervous that he's going to do the same thing with the special prosecutor here, and he could well.
How does this compare to the involvement that you had with the Nixon case and what was referred to as Watergate?
Well, during Watergate, there were at least two avenues that were the basis for uncovering the facts of what happened. One was the special prosecutor that was created because it was a vacancy in the Attorney General's office, and the Senate insisted that a special Watergate prosecutor be appointed. And in the end, it was a special prosecutor who subpoenaed the tapes of Richard Nixon that Richard Nixon made in the White House that forced Nixon's hand. Nixon said, oh, you're trying to get this evidence? Well, you're going to be fired. And he fired him, and that was the beginning of the end of the Nixon presidency because the American people demanded accountability, and that's when impeachment proceedings started. So that was one prong here of the effort. The second was the Senate Select Committee on Watergate, which was made up, it wasn't really a bipartisan committee, but it acted in a responsible, largely bipartisan manner. And they were very aggressive, and they uncovered the fact of the Nixon tapes, which in the end proved out of Nixon's own mouth that he had engaged in obstruction of justice, that he'd forced the ordered the FBI to stop a CIA, I mean, ordered the CIA to stop an FBI investigation into the Watergate break-in and the source of money. So what we had in Watergate was a very aggressive, largely bipartisan Senate inquiry and a very aggressive special prosecutor. What we have here now is an aggressive special prosecutor who is highly regarded. The Watergate special prosecutor was a former Harvard law professor. He was very highly regarded. Mueller is extremely highly regarded, very competent, put together a great team. But what we don't have now is what we had in Watergate, which was a very aggressive Congress, and that's a big problem here. You know, there's some evidence that the Congress wants to wrap up their investigations, even though they're not completed. It's unclear whether, I mean, so far they've had protected various witnesses by allowing them to testify behind closed doors. Why would you do that? And it's not clear that any subpoenas have really seriously been issued here. So I don't have a sense of an aggressive, deliberate congressional proceeding either on the Senate side or the House side. I think the Senate Intelligence Committee may be making some efforts in this regard, but they certainly don't compare to Watergate, in my opinion.
Elizabeth Holtzman, again, a former Democratic U.S. representative from New York. She'll stay with us for the rest of our program. Once again, the Republicans are attempting to change the subject. The president said today in his tweet that This was old stuff with regard to Paul Manafort. It had nothing to do with his campaign. He also then said there is no collusion. And then he asked why Hillary Clinton isn't being investigated. Here again from the White House, Sarah Huckabee Sanders today.
The real collusion scandal, as we've said several times before, has everything to do with the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, and Russia. There's clear evidence of the Clinton campaign colluding with Russian intelligence to spread disinformation and smear the president to influence the election.
Molly Hemingway is a senior editor at the conservative web magazine The Federalist. Good to have you on our program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here with you.
Do you agree with what we just heard from the White House?
Well, I don't know about clear evidence, but there certainly has been a lot of new information that came out as of last week. All of the brouhaha over Russia has had a lot to do with the so-called dossier, which was briefed to the president-elect and President Obama in January. And quickly, details of that meeting were leaked to CNN, and then BuzzFeed released that dossier. It had all the salacious details, sexual and financial impropriety and whatnot. We learned last week that the Clinton campaign and the DNC were two of the funders of that dossier. We don't know if they were the only funders, but they were two of the funders. That dossier was sourced to Russian officials, including Kremlin officials, former top-level intelligence officers, senior Russian foreign ministry figures. And so they were paying a firm that got information from Russian operatives as part of an election strategy. And they tried to shop this around during the campaign last year. So this is just sort of different than the way we had thought about that dossier maybe prior to last week. And I think there's a lot we have to learn.
Wasn't the first funder of the dossier somebody who was, in fact, trying to damage Donald Trump?
No. It is true that, well, I mean, everyone involved in opposition research, that the group Fusion GPS was originally hired by the Washington Free Beacon, which is a conservative publication that is backed by Paul Singer, who was a never-Trump Republican. They did opposition research on Donald Trump and other candidates. Paul Singer was publicly for Marco Rubio, and as part of that campaign, or perhaps as part of the funding of the Free Beacon, they hired Fusion GPS. The dossier doesn't begin until after the Washington Free Beacon is no longer funding them for opposition research.
Okay.
And after the DNC and Hillary Clinton began working with Fusion GPS.
I asked you about this because it was brought up by the president, because it was brought up by his press secretary today. But do you think there's really any relationship between these two things? Couldn't we have two separate situations going on where, on the one hand, the Trump campaign, on the other hand, for whatever reason or to whatever degree, the Clinton campaign, were both involved with the Russians?
Oh, in fact, I think that's what's most interesting about today is not just the indictment of Paul Manafort and his aide, but learning that Tony Podesta, who's a Democratic lobbyist, has just stepped down from the Podesta group because he was working with Paul Manafort. I think we're going to see that Russia's campaign of influence is something that has hit both parties. They work through nonprofits. They work through lobbying firms. They work through groups like Fusion GPS, which is also, you know, funded by Russian interests. We're going to learn more about how much Russia is working to influence U.S. electoral politics, and we're just really at the beginning, I think.
Let me go back to Elizabeth Holtzman. Do you agree that, in fact, the Clinton campaign may have dirty hands as far as involvement with the Russians is concerned?
Look, we don't know very much about what the Clinton campaign did. We do know that they did apparently pay for some opposition research. There's no evidence at this point that anybody from the Clinton campaign met with any Russian officials or anybody sent from Russia. But we do know that happened in the Trump campaign. We also know with regard to the Trump campaign, and this is the determination of all of the U.S. intelligence agencies, that Russia was trying to influence the American election process against Hillary Clinton and for Donald Trump. So let's just get, that's kind of like the basic fact here. So we have Russia trying to affect the outcome of the election, American election, in favor of Donald Trump. They don't know that he's going to win, but they're trying to do things in his favor. Now, did the Hillary Clinton campaign pay for opposition research, try to find out what the relationship was between Trump and the Russians? Obviously they did.
Well, Probably anybody in that position
would have done that, but I don't think that's nefarious. The nefarious thing is that the possibility is not that you paid for opposition research, but that the Russians themselves would be actually either agents or instigators of the actions by the Trump campaign, and that's possible here.
The person who prepared the dossier was not a Russian, but a former British spy.
Correct.
There are those who are claiming that the Republicans are attempting to set up a false equivalency.
No, there's no equivalency. We start, like as I said, we start with the basic fact here that every single intelligence agency of the United States government determined that the Russian government was out to influence the election in favor of Donald Trump. That's an undisputed fact. I mean, I think Donald Trump says it's a hoax, but Donald Trump lies about everything. So that's irrelevant.
All right, let me go back to Molly Hemingway with the Federalist. What do you say to that?
That's actually not true. It is true that that was reported, and it was reported by the New York Times and the Associated Press.
What was reported?
That all 17 intelligence agencies came to this assessment. But it was later corrected when they were found out that was a false claim. It was three intelligence agencies, and it was really a working group between those three agencies. So it didn't go through the normal review that you might expect of
three intelligence agencies is still pretty powerful stuff, isn't it?
Certainly. I just want to clarify it wasn't all 17. That was falsely reported and has since been corrected by those news organizations.
Okay. Elizabeth Holzman, back to you.
I'm not aware that they've ever backtracked from that assessment. I'm never aware that any of these agencies has backtracked from that assessment. What I am aware of is that that charge is out there. That's been firmly disputed by the Trump administration without any evidence. And the president has tried to obstruct, or maybe obstruct isn't the right word, but denigrate Mueller's investigation by saying that Russian influence is just a hoax. It's not a hoax. Intelligence agencies found that about the Russian interference with the U.S. elections, but I think many members of Congress have been some investigations as well have determined that that's the case. I mean, we can't poo-poo what the Russians were trying to do here. If we start off with false facts, if we don't start off with the basic premise that the Russians were trying to interfere with the investigation and just move away from that into politics, that's a mistake. That's a fact. We need to take it where it goes. If Donald Trump had nothing to do with it, fine. If he did have something to do with it, bad, but that has to be uncovered. But we can't sort of go into Hillary Clinton and ignore this fact. Maybe we should be that's the problem. This is a diversion from the basic concern about the interference with the U.S. election by the Russians in favor of Donald Trump.
All right. I want to go to the issue of the congressional investigations that are ongoing. We have a few minutes before we need to go to a break. And Molly, Ilana Shore is a congressional reporter for Politico. She has been studying that situation. And Ilana, thank you for being on our program. How much do you think that these announcements today are going to impact what Congress is doing?
Well, you have three separate committees to look at here, and that's the Senate Intelligence Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee, as well as the House Intelligence Committee. There are three separate probes. There have been efforts to coordinate them in a systematic way. They haven't necessarily taken off yet, and the climate at these three committees is very different. In the House Intelligence Committee, there's quite a partisan food fight going on, and House Republicans are really taking pains to shift the focus here to revelations such as, did the FBI excessively rely on this Steele dossier and the Russian uranium sale that's not connected to President Trump? In the Senate Intelligence Committee has taken great pains to project that it's still moving forward in a bipartisan fashion. And the Judiciary Committee, you're seeing a bit of a split between the top Republican and the top Democrat. So there's a lot going on here on the Hill.
How do you take it when the Secretary for the President, Press Secretary for the President, says she thinks that the investigation by Robert Mueller is going to wrap up very soon?
I think that is what she is paid to do, to make this seem less significant than it probably is going to be. One thing that's perhaps even more important than investigations right now is the number of legislation that has been filed to try to protect Mueller's job. There are two bipartisan bills in the Senate, one from Lindsey Graham and Cory Booker, and another from Tom Tillis and Chris Coons. Now, watch these four senators, because they may seize on this moment to renew their push to get these bills passed.
Okay. We're going to have to take a very brief break. We will do that. We will come back and continue this conversation. We'll also talk with Betsy Woodruff, political reporter for the Daily Beast, about what sort of things Mr. Mueller might be looking for with regard to the indictments that have come down today. On our talking point later, the joy of the Astros and the agony of the Dodgers. On To the Point from PRI.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Warren Olney, once again, today the announcement that the indictment has come from Robert Mueller against Paul Manafort, former campaign manager for President Trump, although the issues involved have to do with Manafort's investments in Ukraine and the failure to pay taxes on them. They occurred roughly at the time, or the conspiracy to avoid taxes when he was, in fact, a campaign chair. We also have an announcement that George Papadopoulos, a somewhat minor league advisor, we're told, on foreign policy to the president, has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Betsy Woodruff is a political reporter for the Daily Beast. It's good to have you on our program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Indeed. So tell us what it is that Mr. Mueller could be seeking with these two things that we've announced today. Do they have to do with each other? They were announced at the same time.
The simultaneous announcement is clearly not a coincidence. One thing that I think we should all be keeping an eye out for is how useful George Papadopoulos proves to be to the Mueller probe. He was very low level on the Trump campaign. Many Trump campaign officials don't know who he is. There was sort of a frantic scramble of Googling this morning as people who are well-wired in Washington tried to figure out who the heck is this guy. But the fact that he's pled guilty and that now he is someone who is, you know, very much in Mueller's sights means that there's a possibility, although we don't know this for sure, that he could be helping Mueller as Mueller seeks to get a better understanding of any communications that may or may not have happened between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. Now, in the order that Rod Rosenstein signed, giving Mueller the authority to investigate the issues that he's currently looking at, Rosenstein specifically directed Mueller to look at any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump. That's a broad mandate. That's a lot of people in that universe. And I think we can say with a lot of confidence that George Papadopoulos knows a bunch about the inner workings of that. So Mueller could have, we don't know for sure, but he could have a valuable asset in this guy.
What is Papadopoulos' connection to Manafort?
I can't speak to Papadopoulos' connection to Manafort. I've read most of the Papadopoulos indictment, but I haven't had time to read all of it this morning. I think the questions about why these two indictments came down the same day aren't yet perfectly clear, to be honest. And the Mueller probe, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, is pretty tight-lipped about how it makes its decisions about timing and strategy. That said, of course, these are two major moments for Mueller. We're going to remember today as a watershed moment in the Mueller probe, and it dramatically changes the way that folks in Washington and the White House are going to be talking about the work Mueller is doing.
Let me go back to Molly Hemingway, again, a senior editor at the conservative web magazine, The Federalist. How would you regard the situation if, in fact, it was proven by Mr. Mueller that there was a connection between the campaign and the Russians, that there was, in fact, collusion, despite the fact that the president denies it? What would that tell you about the president? What should happen as a result?
Well, that would be a really huge development if that happened. I think one of the things that's interesting about today is, in a sense, if you've been following this, you kind of knew Paul Manafort was shady. There have been allegations of money laundering that have been printed in the New York Times, in the Weekly Standard, which is a conservative publication, that have noted that he has these irregularities. So I think people were not surprised that he would be rung up on money laundering. What's more surprising, I think, is that it was just a single count of money laundering and then a bunch of process charges to go along with that. That's a long way from where I think people expected this to go, and that could be an indication, I guess, either that there's less there to go on with Manafort than people suspected, or that Mueller has more coming out in the months to come. There might have been leverage here. You know, there were two things named in the indictment. There was Company A and Company B. We don't know who those companies are, but one of those companies appears to be the Podesta Group, which Tony Podesta just stepped down from today. So this is the kind of probe that could end up making people very nervous on both sides of the aisle as it relates to undisclosed foreign lobbying, which is something that you're seeing heavy players, big players do on both sides. But it could also go back more in the direction of actual election collusion, which is what it was supposed to be about. And in that case, we might see more Mueller interest in Fusion GPS, which did not disclose that it was working on behalf of Russians, according to a complaint that's working its way through legal processes now, and also Venezuelans, the group that Hillary Clinton hired to run the Russia information operation against Donald Trump.
You didn't quite answer my question, which was how would you regard the situation if, in fact, it appeared that there was collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians? Would that, in fact, be illegal? Would it be grounds for impeachment? Would you advise the president then to get rid of Mueller or not to get rid of Mueller?
This is a lot. My point in responding the way I did is that we haven't come close to showing collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. That is not what happened today with this indictment of Manafort and his affiliate. It's not even what happened with the ties to the Podesta group. And it's not even what happened with the Papadopoulos guilty plea showing false statements to the FBI. So we are so far away from that that we need to keep focused on what we actually see in these indictments and guilty pleas versus sort of what we've been promised, which was traitorous collusion with Russia. We're still not seeing that, despite having all these committees looking into this, despite having a special prosecutor, an FBI probe, and all the resources of our national media focused on this. We're not seeing anything illegal collusion, at least yet, and maybe there will be more to come.
Alana Shore speaking to us from the Senate Press Gallery, congressional reporter for Politico. How do you regard the statements that we keep hearing from the White House and from committee chairs, Republican committee chairs, that they want to wrap up these investigations in a hurry? Is that really likely?
Look, it's important to keep in mind that the president is still awaiting his first major legislative accomplishment after many, many months on the job, and his party has full control of Washington. So when we hear the White House saying it's time to wrap up these investigations, whether or not they're trying to deflect attention from any actual evidence of collusion that may yet emerge is almost less relevant because they just want to get a win. And the more that Washington is talking about these investigations, which, to your point, I do not believe will wrap up anytime soon, the less attention the Trump administration is getting on taxes, and it's less likely they'll be able to pass their bill anytime soon.
So what about the split between the Republicans and the Democrats, though, each, of course, trying to make partisan hay out of this? How does it work for the Republicans at this point? Is there any upside for them?
I'm not sure I know what you mean. Upside in what?
Well, it looks bad, obviously, when these people are being indicted or have pled guilty. And when investigation leaders are saying the investigations are going to have to wrap up, what political gain do they have from saying that?
Again, they want to change the subject so they can cut taxes because they firmly believe that if they don't get a tax bill or, frankly, any other kind of real legislative achievement, they're going to lose control of the House and maybe even the Senate next year. So that's what's on Republicans' mind. I mean, you have a handful of conservatives up here who are really Trump true believers and want Mueller to be fired to protect the president. But the predominant Republican view is, hey, let's not fire Mueller, but let's also not keep obsessing over him because it just hurts our agenda.
All right. Elena Shore again with Politico. It's great to have you on our program, and thanks for joining us from the Senate Gallery.
Thank you.
Okay. Betsy Woodruff, back to you. What about Fusion GPS? We just heard about that. What is it? Why does it matter?
Fusion GPS is an opposition research firm that is led in part by alumni of the Wall Street Journal. They were retained by the law firm that worked for Hillary Clinton's campaign during the election. Before that, they, according to reports, were hired by Paul Singer, a Republican mega donor, to find information about Donald Trump that was that would potentially make him look bad and make it harder for him to win the Republican primary. An important thing for people to understand about the dossier that Fusion GPS put together is that, first, of course, it contains numerous salacious and as yet unsubstantiated allegations regarding the president's sexual proclivities and finances. Additionally, though, the dossier was put together by a former British spy named Christopher Steele. And from talking to folks in the intelligence community, my understanding is that he's someone who has a wide amount of respect in Washington. Part of the reason the Steele dossier was taken as seriously as it was, part of the reason that, you know, John McCain took it seriously, the FBI appears to have taken it seriously, folks showed it to President Trump and to President Obama. Part of the reason that it got so much credence and was shared so widely in high-level circles in Washington is because of the level of respect that Christopher Steele had given the work that he'd done. Your viewers may not be aware that the UK is part of the Five Eyes, which are five English-speaking countries that include the United States that cooperate closely and frequently on intelligence matters. Of course, the fact that Steele was paid by Fusion GPS, which was paid by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC, that particular money chain is not something that seems to have been highlighted when his dossier was making the rounds in Washington when people were first becoming aware of it. And obviously, anytime you're talking about a product like this, people should know who is paying for it as they're trying to assess how seriously to take it.
Back to Elizabeth Holtzman. Again, a former Democratic U.S. representative from New York, served on the House Judiciary Committee during the Watergate situation, and is a former district attorney in Brooklyn. You've said that there was a turning point when you were on the House Intelligence Committee during that investigation, when, to some degree at least, partisanship dissolved. Is that possible, do you think, today in our Washington, in Washington as it exists?
You know, I don't know. I think let's start with the Senate committee. By the way, it was in the House Intelligence Committee. It was the House Judiciary Committee.
Judiciary Committee, thank you.
Yeah, if we start with the Senate Watergate Committee, I think it started out kind of a little bit partisan. Howard Baker's famous question, what did the president know and when did he know it, was intended to be a defense of Richard Nixon because he thought Nixon wasn't involved. Those questions, what did the president know, when did he know it, became famous questions, and they actually led to the finding of information about Nixon's connections.
And Baker was a Republican.
And Baker was a Republican, and, you know, he followed the truth. And you have to say most of the members of that committee, instead of trying to obstruct what the committee was doing, tried actually to make sure the committee was conducting a serious investigation, even though it began to turn up very serious information that implicated the president in criminal conduct as well as potentially impeachable conduct. The House Judiciary Committee didn't really start on a partisan basis. It wasn't a Republican counsel as in the Clinton administration, Kenneth Starr, who triggered the impeachment effort in the House. What happened was that the American people demanded that the House act after President Nixon had the special prosecutor fired, because they said, we're not a banana republic, and the president can't determine who this prosecutor is going to be and can't stop evidence from coming forward in a criminal prosecution, that no one's above the law in the United States. And that's what happened. Ultimately, I mean, the Republicans had full opportunity, and the committee bent over backwards at the behest of the chair, to give the president full opportunity to make his points, to argue his issues, to bring his witnesses in. But after a while, the evidence was so overwhelming. And we didn't have the tapes until the end. The evidence was so overwhelming, not just the testimony of the White House counsel, but the president's chief aide kept detailed and meticulous notes. Other members of his staff gave meticulous notes. So there was a huge amount of evidence, and in those days, Many Republicans said more important than my reelection and more important than a president of the United States, even a Republican president, is the country.
And they went to the president, led by Barry Goldwater, and told him he ought to resign. Very quickly, Molly Hemingway, with the Federalist, do you see that Republicans might do the same thing if there were evidence of a very persuasive kind against Donald Trump, or are they going to hold out to the end?
I mean, again, there's no actual crime here that would make sense for someone to ask for Donald Trump's resignation. There is an allegation that the brother of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager and Donald Trump's former campaign chairman were doing money laundering and unregistered as foreign agents. That's something that will definitely affect a lot of people on both sides of the aisle. But as of yet, we still have nothing to substantiate an actual crime committed by Donald Trump as it relates to what we were sort of promised all along, which is this claim that he worked with Russia to steal an election. And until people start providing evidence of that, of criminal activity in support of stealing an election, I don't think you would see anybody suggesting that the president should step down. And in fact, you might see people urging the special prosecutor to make sure that he keeps a clear focus of what his mandate is and what is actually trying to be discovered.
Okay, quickly, Betsy Woodruff, we just have a few seconds left, but do you think that it's going to be incredibly more difficult for the president to run the country while this is going on and it isn't resolved?
No, I think the president has all the influence and power that he needs to do his job.
You said he needs a victory. He's got to have a victory. So do the Republicans in Congress.
I'm not a pundit. I can't speak to like whether or not he needs to get wins in Congress. But the fact that the Mueller probe is ongoing should have no bearing on the president's ability to do his job correctly. Instead, we've seen that both before the probe was initiated and when the probe wasn't making much news, the president had abundant time to get quote unquote wins on Capitol Hill. And while I think there may be folks at the White House who feel that Mueller is a convenient scapegoat for their lack of success thus far at getting Congress to get on board with the president's agenda, I think the reality is that the president has a number of significant hurdles, and Mueller is certainly not the biggest one for his agenda.
Okay, Betsy Woodruff, and it was, in fact, Alana Shore who made the point that the Republicans needed a victory, not you, and I'm sorry for having attributed it to you. Thanks a lot for being with us, political reporter for The Daily Beast. Thanks again to our former guest, Alana Shore. Thanks to Molly Hemingway with The Federalist, Elizabeth Holtzman, a former U.S. representative from New York, served on the House Judiciary Committee, and was a former district attorney in Brooklyn. In a moment, one baseball writer says the World Series has seemingly lost its mind. To the Point from PRI.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Warren Olney here with today's Talking Point.
Two on, two out. 10th inning. That's in the air to left. Here comes Fisher. Throw by Ethier. Astros win it in 10.
10 innings. How many pitching changes? How many lead changes? How many home runs? After last night's fifth game, the Astros lead the Dodgers 3-2 in a World Series Stephen Goldman calls baseball's answer to Game of Thrones. He is host of Infinite Inning, a podcast. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So here in the Los Angeles Times is a summary. The Dodgers blew a 4-run lead, then they blew a 3-1 lead, then they blew a 1-run lead, then they overcame a 3-1 deficit in the ninth and finally fell 13-12 in the 10th. Inning. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Not really, not to the extent that we're seeing it. There were 7 home runs. There have been 22 overall in the series. And, you know, the bullpens of both teams have looked terrible. for that matter, the starting pitchers haven't looked much better. I'm not sure it's them exactly. It's just the fact that you can't trust any fly ball to stay in the yard at this point.
Well, did the Astros lose this, or did the Dodgers win it, rather, or did the Dodgers blow it?
I don't know that they blew it exactly. There were some points where they gave away outs trying to bunt in, again, a game where anything hit in the air seems to have a good chance of going out, not just game, but a series and a season. And there is this sense of what is being called bullpenning, that you cycle aggressively through your relievers, that you can find the bad arm faster than you can find the good arm in some ways. And Dave Roberts did go a long time with Brandon Morrow, who just looked gassed and couldn't get an out. And then Kenley Jansen, his closer, who's normally impeccable, had never thrown more than 33 pitches in the regular season. He gave up the game-winning hit on his 33rd pitch last night. He, too, looked exhausted. And so he played as many hot hands as he could until he found the cold one.
You're talking about the Dodgers. Dave Roberts is the manager of the Dodgers. What about the manager of the Astros? Did he work a perfect game? Or not a perfect game, but did he do everything right?
Well, he let his hitters hit, which is, again, a little bit more than Dave Roberts did. But, again, he also – he has almost more than Roberts has had trouble looking good, because nothing can embarrass a manager faster than a bad choice of relievers. And throughout this series and throughout the postseason, for that matter, it's almost as if the entire Astros bullpen has resigned. They've said they're done. They really are not up to this. They're working under protest. And no matter who he brings in, with the exception of Brad Peacock in the Lance McCullers game, where he threw three great innings to finish that game out, he's really had trouble finding anyone who can get batters out on a consistent basis right now.
When you say that Dave Roberts isn't letting his hitters hit, what do you mean?
Well, again, one of the things that happens with managers in the postseason, and it's very understandable, they get kind of caffeinated. During the regular season, they're a little more reticent about interfering. But, you know, Casey Stengel, the Hall of Fame manager, used to say, you know, this is the kind of thing that drives guys nuts, because you work and you plan, and then you got to turn your whole life over to idiots like this. And I don't think that he really thought that his players were idiots, but you have the urge to do something, because this is your livelihood, this is your career, you want to win as badly as anybody. And so the temptation to say, bunt, hit and run, steal, intentional walk, do something. That sounds like a tweet that's rather famous at this point. Do something. Like, it's the same urge, make something happen when you don't really have control. And so when you're calling for bunts and things at a time when the ball is just so easily hit, and just even going back to the regular season, the home run per fly ball rate in baseball right now is the highest that it's been in history by orders of magnitude. It doesn't make sense to go for one-run strategies.
Stephen Goldman, again, speaking of Casey Stengel with authority. He's author of Forgiving Genius, Forging Genius, The Making of Casey Stengel. That's about the manager, former manager, of course, deceased now, of the Yankees. Well, tell us more about the balls in this series. The pitchers have complained they're too slick. And they've also said, and so it's hard to throw a slider. They've also said that they think they're juiced.
This has been something that's been going on all year, and in fact, going back to about the All-Star break in 2015. At that point, halfway through the season 2 years ago, home run rates began to skyrocket. Now, Major League Baseball has said, hey, the balls are within official tolerances. They are not juiced. We have not changed the way they're put together in any way. But the problem with that explanation is, and you can draw an interesting contrast here, because, you know, in the NFL, Tom Brady had footballs that were off by a few pounds of air per square inch, and you practically had a federal investigation of it. Bob Mueller was almost on that. And, you know, in baseball, the tolerances are so wide as to be almost meaningless. So you can have a ball with what they call the coefficient of restitution, how hard it comes off the bat. You can have a ball that just sort of goes splat and dribbles in front of the plate and doesn't go anywhere, and another one that sort of, you know, goes woohoo and is a super ball and goes, you know, leaping over tall buildings in a single bound, and they're both within the specs for the ball. So for baseball to say, oh, well, we didn't do anything or didn't overtly change anything, or there's no order that we made, doesn't necessarily mean that the balls have not in some way changed their construction.
What about not just being juiced, but also being slicker, as I understand the pitchers are complaining, on both teams, making it harder for them to grip and get that spin that they need in order to get sliders and curves.
Well, that's been a question all year, too, as to whether the stitches are being put together in a different way, or they might be raised too high or raised too low, whether the covering of the ball is slicker. And this may also go to the fact that, you know, there's a pregame ritual with umpires where they have these special canisters of Delaware River mud that come from one specific spot. And they have been since an ex-player named Lena Blackburn was supplying them to baseball going back, you know, practically 100 years now, where the umpires rub up those balls to get some of the gloss off of them and allow the pitchers to grip them a little better. For whatever reason, the pitchers are having trouble with that, and they're saying that that's what is causing them, particularly Yu Darvish, for example, although both sides have talked to this or have testified to the fact that this is true, they've not been able to make their sliders do what they're supposed to do. And a flat slider is also known as a batting practice fastball, which, again, would go to the sheer number of home runs being hit.
Yu Darvish, the Dodgers pitcher who got clobbered in which game was it? Game 3. Was it not, or was it game 2?
I believe it was game 3. Yeah.
Game 3. Isn't this pretty stressful on the fans, not just those who watch on television or listen to it on the radio, but people who watch it on Twitter and on their smartphones?
Well, yeah, it absolutely is, because you can't take anything for granted. And one of the things about the postseason is that the, you know, pitchers is pitching is two-thirds of baseball crowd. They're kind of being thwarted this year, because I don't know that it's true all the time. But when you get to this stage of the season, when all the bad teams have been filtered out and they've long since gone home, and you've gone through this multi-round test that is the playoffs, you really do have the best pitching teams here usually. There have certainly been exceptions. The 1987 Twins had Burt Blyleven and Frank Viola and something called Les Straker after that, and somehow won a World Series. But on the whole, here you have Clayton Kershaw, you have Darvish, who we just talked about, you have Dallas Keuchel, won the Cy Young Award 2 years ago. And normally, to score runs off these guys, you have to chain up a lot of hits. You got to have a single, a walk, a double, maybe there is a bunt in there somewhere. But that's not happening right now. Instead, what you're maybe having is a single, and then a ball flies out of the building. Normally, it's very hard to sequence up hits against pitchers who are this good, who toss in this many strikeouts. There aren't balls in play, and so nothing bad happens. But right now, it's just not necessary. It's all kind of this force majeure thing where you can just change the score by hitting the ball out.
So now it would seem, as the Dodgers get ready to play the Astros tomorrow in Los Angeles, it's pretty hard to predict what's going to happen.
It is, and the Astros have Justin Verlander going for them, their late-season acquisition, who is the one guy who seemingly tends to rise to the occasion at times like these. And who knows, he's kind of due to get tired, too. It seems like everybody is kind of tired. And, of course, all of the home runs and everything, they prolong the game, they bring up another batter, there are more pitches. So, it's late in the year. He's always been a workhorse. But you'd think that he would give them a certain advantage and maybe the possibility of putting this thing away in 6 games.
Okay, more batters, as you indicated, more relievers as well, as that becomes more and more important in the game of baseball. Stephen Goldman with Infinite Inning, the podcast, author of Forging Genius, The Making of Casey Stengel. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Orman Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast, co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.